Blog Talk Radio.
HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com.
Today in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I'm talking with Keith Wattelli, former chairman of the Madison County, former chairman of the Madison County Democratic Party. Madison County Democrats believe in the equality of all people, the power of education, the dignity of work, and or responsibility to each other, especially the least of these. The job of the Madison County Democratic Executive Committee is to help build the Democratic Party structure within Madison County, register new Democratic voters, help elect Democratic candidates at the local, state, and national level. They also run an aggressive Get Out the Vote campaign, or known as GoTV, program to elect Democrats to serve the people of Madison County and Alabama. They have developed a long-range plan to recruit, train, and support qualified Democratic candidates at all levels, focusing on local as well as state offices. The Democratic Party of Madison County promotes and supports progressive ideas, and candidates throughout communities. They are working every day to turn Madison County blue, one voter at a time. The work they do strives to improve our schools, help those in need, and build an economy we can be proud of and advance the cause of liberty and justice for all. Good morning, Mr. Whitley. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really exciting to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. Glad to have you on. Can you give any of our listeners any updates what's going on in the Madison County Democratic Party?
Well, right now I know that they are really gearing towards the primaries. I would encourage people to go to the executive meetings. You can find the information on their website at www.madisoncountydemocrats.com. And right now, obviously, there's a lot of talk about, you know, supporting Hillary Clinton, also a lot of talk about supporting Bernie Sanders. But, you know, there's also, you know, other elected officials that we've got to support, too. So now is a really good time to get in touch with folks on the executive committee. One of the great things about the Madison County Democrats is that you don't have to necessarily be a member of that executive committee to go to the meetings and find out how you can get involved.
Okay, that's great. Well, I was wondering, like you said, it's time to get involved in this. All the things we had in place during Obama's first election, and I'm talking about, I know the Democratic Party was a big tent, we won, but I mainly, in bringing voices to power, I want to bring a voice to the grassroots, because I've worked in the Huntsville scene politics before. I've worked for Parker Griffith. I've worked for Richard Shell.
Right.
I put out a newsletter just doing my own thing because I felt even though I was a Democrat and in the party supported their causes, I didn't really see grassroots people's issues, you know, really addressed some of the things that are hurting our community. So when I say that, I say that to go back to this. What happened to all the apparatus we had in place locally to get Obama elected? Because this is very important for the next Democratic to have a president and legislators, because we want them to keep what he brought to the table in place. So they got to understand, got to come out as fervently for whoever the nominee is, just as you were when you first got Obama elected, because we got to sustain his policies. And I don't think there's somebody else at this level shaking that tree.
No, I would say you're right, unfortunately. You know, one of the, you know, when I was Democratic Party chair, I was chair for about 2.5 years. And one of the things I kept stressing to folks, because they were riding this huge wave of enthusiasm to get Obama reelected, we were successful in that. And we had a huge grassroots effort all throughout the community. And in fact, you know, we had sent people down to Florida, to other swing states, to help get out the vote there, because we knew in Alabama we, you know, our voice would be kind of muffled. But one of the things I kept stressing to volunteers and to organizers was that you've got to keep this momentum going. And sadly, after the election, you know, we continue to have events, we continue to try to keep that momentum going, but people, you know, they quit getting involved. And so one of the problems with politics is that, you know, people ride a wave of enthusiasm and then get discouraged and they drop out. And then right at the next election cycle, they get back involved. But the problem is you don't have sustained momentum. And so that's
the reason we don't have that is there's nobody. It's sort of like that type of. The apparatus is laid off after the election. But that's the most important part that you need. Hardly any money. I mean, you can send the Democratic Party as you go up the ladder. The money is best used locally. When you get money coming in from somewhere like down in Montgomery or anywhere else to support a local candidate, they're not spending it where they should be. They should be spending it in the grassroots. They can have these big dinners. They can invite people in to speak, but you need to be motivating and being with the people who's actually going to be casting the vote. You need those huge numbers. So you need somebody courting them and training them and educating them 24/7. That part you don't
need.
And the best place to do that is from the grassroots. But like I'm saying, the money never reaches the grassroots.
You know,
and I did it before myself, too. Get out and walk.
Sure. Sure, well, I mean, you're really preaching to the choir here, and you know, I mean, it's something I've said all along, and it gives you an idea how much of a difference it actually makes. Is that, you know, during the last election cycle, you know, one of the things that we saw was that we had such a strong, committed volunteer base, and when it came to local issues that really affected Madison County, we were able to make a difference. If you remember, it was a special election actually that was held to combine the revenue, you know, basically the tax assessor and a tax collector's office into a revenue commissioner. That, you know, and that those seats were held by Democrats, and it was a Republican initiative to combine those offices. But because we had such a strong volunteer base at that time, the Republicans thought they'd sort of slide it in and they'd win it and be done. But we actually won that, and it was fantastic because we saw what happened when you combine those offices in Marshall County and other places where there was a lot of, you know, graft and corruption around all that. So we did a good thing for Madison County, but we only did it because we had people that actually showed up to the polls, that cared about the issue, and we were organized, and we got the word out, and Democrats showed up to the polls, and we won that.
Yeah.
So that's an example of how it makes a difference locally.
And this goes to another thing that I talk about is a lot of people don't want to admit is the voter apathy. And mm-hmm. I've seen a politician with my own eyes sort of like blame the voter. Like the voter, no, we got this information right here. Where are they at? He actually said this in a meeting. Where are they at? We're meeting here. We're all there. And he said, I just throw my hands up with him. I heard a politician said that. That was the last Democratic meeting that I went to. I can best help the Democratic Party from around the edges until that part
right.
gets fixed. That's why I had some good advice from Laura Barron. He was on the show. You got to start organizing mm-hmm. at a grassroots level. The best way to do it
that's
is
right.
from like the bottom up because we're in such disarray. But the voter apathy is there because some of our politicians, they're not training up the youth. They're not grooming nobody. You know, it's a lot of grandstanding. It's a lot of grandstanding, especially with the grandstanding going down south. And it's no secret. Mm-hmm. I've said for a long time.
Right.
For a long time. Joe Reed needs to do the best for the party, step aside and let a newer, younger generation come through. That's, until
Absolutely.
We fix that and we fix what happened with Dunn Sigel and the Democratic Party in Alabama, is not going to be able to do nothing except for, like what Laura Barron said, do it on the grassroots yeah. level.
I agree. You know, recently a poll came out that was very telling, and it's something that I've written about for several years now, and I keep talking about, is that I think what's happened is that there are a couple things. One is that Alabama Democrats really need to understand that they can win. They've got to believe in the fact that they can win, and polling data bears that out, that right now the Republicans have made a mess of things. We've got huge opportunities. When you talk about the economy, education, and equality, and you have real policies behind those talking points, people listen and you can get elected. You know, the other thing is that not only can we win, we've got to really be recruiting people that are willing to run for these offices. And what I see, and this is where there's a failure in Montgomery with the current leadership for the state party, is that we're not really actively going out there and not only getting good candidates, but supporting them at a state level. And the way that we can affect this change is for people to show up and get involved. It takes a huge amount of time commitment, but it's worth doing. You know,
yeah.
I'm on the radio all the time, on television, writing articles for AL.com, and that word is resonating with people. And what I want to see is younger folks get involved and carry that message and run for office. But they've got to be supported.
Yeah, see, that's what really hurt us now is you got these younger folks coming up wanting to get involved in it, and you got, you know, I know it's not a lot of money out there, but you got these stingy politicians mm-hmm. that don't want to put money into the local communities for that person who loves and wants to do this.
That's
and
right.
and they sort of feel like, I see this in my community, I just talk on it because this is what I do. Our African-American leaders have got to stop being scared to let mm-hmm. a new, he might not think like you. You know, it's a different
right,
generation.
Right.
They might say, well, this person's too radical, but he's a good organizer, and he's got a good standing connection with the grassroots people, but he might say some things that you don't agree with. If you don't agree with them 100%, then
right.
they have the mind state, like, they're not even going to want to see that person in power. And so
yeah,
you get a younger person who gets the office, and the first thing they see, they want to get involved in politics. Well, here's your commissioner who's been here for 35 years, longer than this person's been born. And then the person has an attitude where they don't want to help this younger person. That's where the apathy lies, right there. And until our African-American leaders take notice of that, that you got to pull these younger people in, don't be afraid of different ideas and voices. You're not going to agree on everything. Until they do that, you're going to keep getting the apathy. Now, like you said, there's a lot of enthusiasm because of the way they've screwed up in Montgomery and nationally as well. So now is the time when I was saying that apparatus, that Obama apparatus within the black community that was motivating, that brought us all out. We should have a goal to double that, to sustain what he has done.
Absolutely. And, you know, and the tools are available to do it. You know, as much as I think he's a absolute joke and, you know, his policies and his statements are so bigoted and unrealistic, but you look at how Donald Trump has been able to manipulate the media, manipulate social media and things like that. And, you know, I don't think that he's actually a viable candidate. I think that, you know, his 15 minutes of fame, if you will, is going to be over pretty soon as people start to really look at his past and look at what he really stands for. I think he's a disgrace. But there, you can learn something from what he's doing right now. And it's also a lesson Obama taught us when he was really masterful at using social media, at using kind of an all-of-the-above strategy to have this sort of tidal wave of support that brought him into office the first time and also helped get him reelected. One of the great things Obama taught me was, you know, try not, you know, you don't have to go get $10,000 from one donor. What you can do is you can get 10,000 people all donating $1 and get this overwhelming amount of support. And so you do that by literally having one-on-one conversations with people, getting out the vote one person at a time and working diligently, realizing that it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And
yes,
when you saw that apparatus work, it's amazing. You know, even now today, I still get emails from, you know, Organizing for America, basically Obama for America. They're still in touch with folks, but you're right. We've got to distill this down to a micro level, to a grassroots level in your community, and talk to people about why it's important to get involved, how their vote actually really does matter, their voice matters. People listen, but I think right now a lot of folks are feeling apathetic. They feel like they're not being heard. But I challenge them to look at what's going on throughout the United States and see the struggles that are out there. And you know, you look at a movement like Black Lives Matter. You know, for years we've been talking about police brutality. We've been talking about how African Americans are unfairly targeted by law enforcement. And now people are finally starting to listen, but it's because of activists at a local level that got out there and said enough is enough. So there is potential for change out there, but folks have got to kind of get off their couch and get motivated and get out there and get doing it.
You're exactly right, and on that, like you said Black Lives Matter. I'm working with some people on Black Fathers Lives Matter. you know, because when you look at child custody laws and child support laws, and I'm just going to be frank here because you know, within my community, they don't know what I'm talking about. You get some type of bitter ghetto mindsets things, and that will set a person on a path to be in financial slavery.
That's right. That's right. You know,
and the worst thing comes out of that is then this is a common phrase in black music. People might not like that I said it, but they can't dispute it, the truth. A lot of single black mothers will tell their kids if the father owes them something, you know, your daddy ain't shit. You know, that is the human resources side of it. They're not addressing the parental alienation that goes on and that is set up for. You know,
I've been
working on a bill called the equal partners in conception. Because the incentive to do this needs to be taken away. Because
I see it only
destroying people's lives.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm working with
they end up Yeah, they end up in my agency. You know, right now I work as the executive director for First Stop. And what we do here is we help homeless folks transition from the street to stable and independent living. And one of the reasons I undertook this and bowed out of leadership in the Democratic Party for a while, I mean, I still intended to get involved at some future point, but I saw a real need here in our community in Huntsville where it's not really an African-American problem. It's truly an economic problem.
It's an economic problem, and it's across the board, like you said. It's just within my community, within my African community, because that's the voice I'm trying to bring to power from the grassroots level. Sure. Is that type of mentality is mm-hmm. really destructive to the child, mm-hmm. It's real bad. You might not know that, but it's real bad. And what you're talking about doing. That's very honorable work. I've always worked with the homeless and the hungry. Right now, I'm certified mm-hmm. right now to get food mm-hmm. from the North Alabama Food Bank. We were helping about 25 families through our church. So that's great work. That's some great work.
Yeah,
I'd love to be involved more, something like that.
That would be great. And, you know, this whole theme of empowerment and having your voice heard, it really resonates amongst our homeless community. And one of the things that we're really trying to do is, you know, when a lot of these folks see me, you know, I'll be honest, they see white guy in a suit, and you know, how can we relate? How what can you do for me? How can we work together? And one of the things that makes this place special is that we focus on putting together an individualized plan for people to help them find all the steps they need to take to go from the street to having an apartment, having transportation, having a good job, all those different things. And what we really try to help folks understand here is that, you know, your effort makes a difference, and we're here to help you. We're not here to enable you. We're here to help you. And, you know, I think that a lot of times what happens is that, particularly in politics, a lot of these real and granular messages get lost because we speak so much in rhetoric. I hear all the time people, they're just surprised. Yeah. They say, well, we thought you were this liberal Democrat, and you're talking about self-sufficiency. And what I keep explaining to folks is that, you know, you can be a liberal Democrat and still believe in helping people achieve their own goals. That our social safety net is not designed for people to, you know, to be there in perpetuity. It's designed to really
exactly.
be a step to something else. So that's what we try to do here at First Stop. And we also understand that, you know, I've got clients here that are not capable of self-sufficiency. They've got either, you know, profound mental disorders or profound physical disabilities that prevent them from being self-sufficient. Those folks, you know, we don't expect that they're going to be able to do it all on their own, or even at all on their own.
And your burden is going to be heavy with them. Just now, you know, they cut all the money to mental health. So where does that leave an organization like yours?
Well, you know, I'm working really closely with the judges, with law enforcement. In fact, the other day, you know, let me give a big shout out to the Huntsville Police Department for doing this. People don't hear about this kind of stuff because it happens behind the scenes. But what happened was there was a homeless guy that was living behind the West Precinct, and the cops saw him. And instead of going and arresting this guy immediately, they called me up and they said, "Cleet, can you go out there, talk to this guy and see what's going on?" I went out there. I tried to make contact with this individual. I could tell that he had a lot of issues. And so he was not willing to talk to me, but I called the police back and I said, "Look," I said, "rather than incarcerate this man, when you do finally, you know, get back in touch with him, then what he needs mental health treatment. He needs to go to the hospital. They need to do a psychological assessment on him and get him the care that he needs." And they made that commitment. And that's what's starting to change by having, you know, good relationship in the community is, you know, rather than just automatically target somebody, automatically throw them in jail, what we're trying to do is do different things now. And that's how politics works at a very, very local level.
So yeah, I'm excited. That works good. Yeah, that's good. That's very good on a local level. We need more of that in all the communities.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
It should be. People should know these people. If you know this person and you see them maybe going through something, you shouldn't just walk past them. You got to check them out and see what's, you know.
But that's right. That's right. So, you know, what we've got to start doing actually is just taking, you know, personal responsibility for where we are in our community and how our neighbors are doing and what's going on around us. And I think what's happened with a lot of young folks today is they don't get involved because they don't see how it matters to them. You know, you talk about some of these big salient issues that are out there right now. You know, what's going on with immigration? What's going on with the economy? What's going on with all these different things that are out there that seem so much bigger than the average person? But what they don't realize is that these things really do indeed affect them. You know, one of the things I've been talking about for a long time is this wealth disparity. We've got to do something about rich people that own companies, giving themselves tons of raises and not letting any of that money filter back down to providing sustainable wages for people where they don't have to be on public assistance. It's a big deal. And
what you said there goes, like you said, the income disparity. And that also goes to, like I said, one of the issues that I'm tackling right now that I was just telling you about is income disparities between custodial and non-custodial parents.
Because you can,
if you're having your wages deducted and they got the certain level, they need to put the bar at a certain way to make this thing even. My whole idea with this thing is they need to bring parenting back to an equal level. They should not be, there's a lot of people that's narcissists that are working the system to do parental alienation and also to do things to the other parent. You know, we have this outbreak. There's an outbreak. Some men as well as women, they'll get their kids driving to the ocean or something like that, or father killed the woman and the kids and stuff. People, you're just violating a lot of civil rights, and then you got somebody that may be bitter, a custodial parent, but I don't like to say it's just women. It's custodial parents. But they, because I've seen it done to females also, the custody be used to just drive the person into the ground. But they need to bring this thing back to an even level. And I think that would take some pressure off. And parental alienation is a real problem. It's domestic terrorism. That's exactly what they need to call
I see that all the time. I mean, you know, one of the things we deal with here at First Stop that we see a lot of is that women in particular have such a harder time, you know, when they're homeless, and particularly if they have children. In Huntsville, we don't have good mechanisms in place for families that are displaced to keep them together. Oftentimes, if you're a single mom and you've got, say, a boy that's 16 and a girl that's 13, you're going to get split up. You know, but a lot of this can be prevented. And the way you prevent it is through really investing in your community. You know, one of the sad things that I see with Huntsville over the last, you know, 20, 30 years is how so many investment dollars have gone to the south end of Huntsville, gone out to Madison, and we've neglected, you know, North Huntsville and West Huntsville. And, you know, I am encouraged that these issues are being discussed, you know, at city council with the mayor's office and also at a legislative level. But, you know, one of the things that we've got to really work on doing is preventing widespread poverty. And you do that community investment.
I hate to cut you off, but we go back and forth like this because we're bringing the voices out. One of the reasons, but it's exactly, I just want to, you know, make sure that I get the voice out that coincides with what you're saying. There's no investment in North Huntsville. That's what people at the grassroots level feel. They keep a poverty-stricken area like that so they can prey upon them with these tickets, speed traps, and all these other things and high fines. This is manufactured. You know, the fact that they're sitting around talking to it at some table now, you know, what they need to be talking about is how they're going to replace this income that they've been preying upon really poor people. But you're right. That coincides exactly with what you're saying, and nationally as well.
So let me just say a few things. That one is that, you know, I don't go every single meeting, but I go pretty frequently to city council meetings, and I really think that they needed if more people got involved, they would need a different venue. But instead, at City Hall, there's usually about 100, maybe 100 seats in that little auditorium, and it's hardly ever full. And what I'm saying is that the city council meets publicly for people to get involved. Every single city council meeting, there's an opportunity for a citizen to say what's on their mind directly to the mayor, directly to their councilman. And I rarely see people there. But that's government at work. And what we're supposed to do as citizens is show up and air our concerns.
That's lazy politicians at work. You got to get some money together. The politician, that's what I was getting at. The politician, if can't nobody on the grassroots level be out there saying exactly what you're saying, how important it is, there's a seat for you, we need you because this going on. If nobody's out there saying that to the grassroots, which they should be knowing this, then somebody in the grassroots should be empowered to get a van and take them down there to the meetings.
That's
or the politician himself in that district should have a van in his district for anybody who wants to go down there. That would be money well spent, and that would be everybody participating in democracy.
That's right, and that's the key is to participate. And I was going to give a shout out and give a web address for folks that want to get involved. Particularly, because the city council is not necessarily partisan politics. They say they're not, but we know it's partisan. But for partisan politics, a great group that's out there right now is Forward Alabama. And it is a grassroots group of citizens dedicated to building the brightest possible future for all people in Alabama. And what they're trying to do is really get organized. I know they're real active in Birmingham. They're just getting started in Huntsville, and I know they've had some successful meetings here. But you can go to their website. It's forwardalabama.org. And I know, like, for example, they're having a voter registration at the Sidewalk Film Festival that's sponsored by the Over the Mountain Democrats in Birmingham. They're also doing stuff, here locally. So what I would suggest is that, people get on that Madison County Democrats.com website, contact local party leaders, contact these folks from Forward Alabama. And the most important thing you can do is just simply participate, get involved. Make a difference. As we look at this special legislative session coming up and the huge cuts that they're trying to implement in mental health, the huge cuts they're trying to implement in Medicaid, things like that, they affect local people. And what matters is you writing a letter, not a form letter, but you write a letter to your representative. If you live in District 53, talk to Anthony Daniels, write him a letter that when these congressmen, at a state level, they get these letters, these legislators get these letters, it makes a difference that you hear so many times that they're not hearing from people and they got to hear from you.
Yeah. And that's what we got to do to get the involvement that we need. We got to go back and invest in the grassroots community. We got to start, it's good. And some people will hear the call. They will hear the call and they will come out and do it. But some people, like you said, they have to be contacted one-on-one. So we need the boots on the ground They need a motivating grassroots force at the grassroots level. And once the Democrats decide to do that, they're going to be successful.
Absolutely. And
that's the way to combat the apathy. Yes.
Well, I don't see how anybody can be apathetic right now. When you saw the clown show that was our last legislative session, the amount of money they wasted to pass bills on, what was going to be the state pie and things like that. And then the only job a legislator has to do in Alabama is pass a budget. And they failed in that. They had a special session. They again failed in that. Now they're going to have another special session. And, a brief look at history shows what happens if they don't pass this budget, that teachers are literally not get paid. Highway projects will stop. They will close state parks. They will do all these things. And, this Republican narrative that somehow Alabama is just awash in money and that if we just eliminate more, we're going to get rid of all this waste, fraud, and abuse is what they keep claiming. That's all hogwash. And what folks have got to do is start standing up for what matters in their community. If you've got relatives, odds are some of them are on Medicare and Medicaid. It's important to say, hey, I want that program funded. It's important to say that, hey, I'm tired of driving in Alabama on roads that are full of potholes in my community. Come fix these things. That's why I pay tax dollars. So
So instead, what we've got is a governor who's very weak. He's been giving a lot of money to corporate entities and putting those businesses in places where there's already business. And we've got to do is hold these politicians accountable and say, look, you know, we want jobs in North Huntsville. We want jobs in West Huntsville. And we're willing to stand up for that. And when you start doing that and you get that grassroots loud voice together, politicians listen. But it's like I saw the other day that if you want to defeat the 1% in this country, 99% have to vote. The 99% can beat the 1%, but they've got to vote. They got to get involved.
Yeah, they get to. If not, you're going to keep getting the same things getting. The Republicans in Alabama, they've already proved a long time ago that they can't govern. Mm-hmm. And they proved that with what they've done to, once they got in the right positions, they broke all kind of rules, laws, and any form of common decency to railroad him into jail. It's just a shame about what happened. And I encourage people to go see the documentary. You can see it also on YouTube. It's called Killing Atticus.
It's a travesty. It's
really bad.
What people don't understand is that's actually that case with Don Siegelman is actually being taught in law schools now about really as an expose of how the system can go wrong. And there have been attorney generals from all over the United States. You know, everybody that has a brain that looks at this says, you know what, Don Siegelman should not be in jail. But it was a political witch hunt, and it shows just how far some people are willing to go to manipulate a system for their own political advantage and for their own ends. And as Americans, I mean, we should be outraged about this, just as we should be outraged about a lot of things that are going on in our country right now. And then the way to effectively channel that outrage is through intelligent participation, getting involved, tackling issues that affect you and your community and your family, and being loud about it and influencing people in a way where they get all the facts and they come to the same conclusion you do. You know, it's funny, I've been doing Dale Jackson's show once a week. He's a conservative talk show radio.
How's that going?
It's rough, you know, but what's funny is that the reason I did it was because there's not a liberal voice on there. He invited me to come on. I knew I was going to be attacked, but, you know, it's good. It sharpens my argument. It helps me present things with a different kind of clarity. And what's been funny is that a lot of his audience has been calling in now going, hey, this Clee Wetley guy, he's not so crazy. He's kind of making sense to me. And, you know, that's how you change minds in politics is you have the debate. You get in there and, you know, it's not about mudslinging, you know.
Be willing to tackle the tough issues.
You're right.
Willing to tackle the tough issues.
Well, we talked about Sandra Bland, for example, and it was a tough conversation because, you know, here are two white guys talking about this, but he's coming at it from a standpoint of white privilege. And doesn't understand, if she just acted right, then this wouldn't have happened. And I had to back him out of that and say, look, you know, this was a racial issue. And you have to understand the frustration of the African-American community, because since 1972, this war on drugs has been targeted specifically at them. You look at the disparity in sentencing. You look at racial profiling and how that's occurred. So, yeah, they've got a right to be angry. And she's got a right to feel like she's being singled out by that cop. And because you don't understand that, because you never walk through a parking lot, you know, on a south side of Huntsville and have people locking their doors just because you're black. You know, and that was something I don't think he'd heard before. And it helped him kind of look at it maybe a little bit differently. And that's why it's so important. Like you said before, you may not agree with folks on everything, but make your case and listen and learn and try to put it out there. If you do that,
the smallest point that you make could be the very thing that changed their mind.
That's right.
You've got to have the debate, and you got to have the discussion. It hits the show, bringing voices to power. Like I said, I worked in politics a lot, and like I said, some of the voices don't get heard, so I felt the need to go out and be that voice, and I'm the perfect person to do it. Mind debate
I
and discussion,
agree.
And I like people to have information, all information.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to mention something too. You mentioned Lowell Barron earlier, and it was funny because there's a lot of stuff that he has done that I strongly support, and there's been some stuff that I don't support at all. You know, I used to work, at a methadone clinic, and a lot of people have very mixed emotions about methadone, and Lowell Barron made it really impossible for us to construct more methadone clinics in the state of Alabama, and I thought his approach on that issue was wrong, but he and I have never sat down and had a dialogue about it, but
yeah,
what I'm getting at is that it's
okay. I'd love to get both of y'all on and we talk about it.
Yeah, I would love to, but what I'm getting at is I still support a lot of what he's done, and it's okay to have disagreements with people in your own party. And what you do is you debate and you come to some kind of consensus or resolution. You know, what I've learned in politics is that most solutions are actually really not partisan solutions, they're pragmatic solutions. They're solutions that are necessary to address and solve a problem. You know, you look at our state budget right now, no one wants to talk about the elephant in the room, and that's property taxes. Alabama's got the lowest property taxes in the nation. If you double them, we'd still be lowest. And what we've got to do is find a sensible way to communicate that some property taxes need to be raised, probably not on the middle class or the poor. But you got timber companies paying the same rates as homeowners, and that's crazy. So, again, these are not necessarily partisan solutions, but they're pragmatic solutions. And, that's where the debate comes in. So we can share kind of the same ideology and still disagree on specific issues, and that's okay. But the important thing is to be there having a debate, period. And that's where I think a lot of young folks are missing the boat. They've just got to get involved and see how their participation makes a real difference. It's how they have a voice.
Yeah, this comes to the motivation we get. I try to motivate young people all the time. You can get involved, and like I said, the social media, they very well connected. And sometimes you got to join some of these popular sites. You find the ones that they may be mostly about the culture, the dress or whatever, or the music, but some part of that site and that element has a political or, something that for people to get involved in different things if it's caring for the homeless. You don't have to be political to care and help the homeless. But you have to get in there and those sites and become part of them. You sound like you do some of the same work as a friend of mine, Tony Hawks.
Mm-hmm. I know Tony. I do. He used to work over at the Children's Advocacy Center. Yeah, great man.
Yeah. Yeah, he sure is. I had him on I had a recording when we was on the show. I got to go clean that up because it was a great show, but the sound wasn't right. I'm trying to get the sound on that right. But he talked about the same thing you were talking about earlier. And like I said, you need people who are willing to go into these houses. Hey, there might be some roaches crawling over the place. You might see a rat shoot across the floor. But you got to have the humility to go in there and have that one-on-one contact with these people and just got to be calm, as long as nobody's in danger.
Well, people are messy is what I always say. And by messy, I mean we have complex problems in our lives. It's why a lot of things don't work when you put social programs out there, because everybody tries to have this one-size-fits-all solution. What makes it different here at First Op, and also what makes it different in politics, is to really start talking about the individual and construct social programs and put forth help out there that's individual in nature. That we see this all the time where, someone has a great idea for a program and they think, we'll put these criteria in it to make sure that no one's scamming the system. And we'll put it out there. And then they realize that it doesn't have the intended effect. So, I see the aftermath of that with, I keep going back to this war on drugs, but, I've got folks that, have felony convictions that are really trying to turn their lives around, but they can't get a job. They can't go back.
We need to do some work because you and I didn't know this beforehand, but we're doing some of the same type of work. I'm helping, and I got the show on here. You can look in the archives. I was helping a recovering meth addict. And they went through all the programs legally they were supposed to, did all the time, and they graduated several other programs even when they were off of it. But you can't, just like with the marijuana, shouts out to Laura Hall. I think she was one of the first who tried to do something about marijuana years and years ago. I don't remember exactly what her deal was, but I know she was one of the first. But we got people with these charges, like you said, in this system, mm-hmm. that when they get out, they can't get it. It's going to be difficult to get a job. It's going to be almost impossible to get a house. And then you can't. You probably won't be able to vote again. So you're taken out of the whole American system. You can't affect change no more because of this mess up. You can't affect political change.
It disproportionately affects young black men, and it's a travesty. And one of the things I've been a strong proponent of, I'm hoping to introduce a bill sometime this next year to talk about earned expungement, where we really want to give people a second chance. You know, I mean, when I was young, I did some crazy stuff, and it's for the grace of God that I didn't have to suffer the consequences of some of my actions. But what I will say is a lot of people...
Same thing here.
Right, and they do, and it's a severe and harsh, almost lifelong penalty, especially if it's a felony. And what's happened now is that we've got so many people out there that, you know, as a society, we tell them, okay, you messed up, you did your time, you paid back everything you were supposed to, but hey, we're still going to penalize you anyway. That, you know, when you go to try to get this apartment, we're going to do a credit check, and oh, wow, it came up, you got a felony, you don't have any credit, so we're not going to help you. And when you try to get a job that, you know, is more than minimum wage, where you can actually sustain your family, sustain yourself, now you can't have that either because you had this felony 15 years ago. That's the kind of stuff that we've got to address. It affects people. And we're just not doing it.
And it's part of that recycling that's going on. Those people mm-hmm, who are mm-hmm. faced with never being able to affect change in the world's greatest mm-hmm. democracy because you got caught with some weed, because you got caught with some other type of drugs, but you didn't do nothing violent or crazy. You just got mm-hmm. caught in this thing, so you'll never be able to participate in the world's greatest democracy. You know, again, that's crazy.
Right.
And then it's going to be difficult to get a job and get somewhere to live. What do you think is going to happen to a person like that? Six months to a year, they will be right back.
Exactly. And so that's why it matters. And that's why, you know, if you're living, you know, here in Huntsville and you're 22 years old and, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I make a difference? And you're sitting there thinking all this stuff's so overwhelming. There's so many issues like that that affect either you, your neighbor, someone in your community, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband, your wife, that all you got to do is identify a couple of those issues and then get involved. Be a voice for that. It really makes a difference. And, you know, I've seen some success here in Alabama. I've seen a lot of young people at the high school level, for example, you know, they can't even vote yet. But they're busy organizing, they're getting involved, they're making a difference in their community. But again, it just requires your willingness and your time. You don't have to have a lot of money to do it. You know, when I started organizing for Obama for America, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I'll be honest. I met this wonderful lady, Diane Adetona, and she happened to be from Nigeria. She was here, and she said, I'm doing this thing with Obama for America. I want you to get involved. And that's how my career in politics started. And it started with just pool. And I found somebody that was kind enough to let us just use an office space for free. And within a matter of months, it grew from 3 people to about 50 people in attendance every week. And before you knew it, we were making phone calls. We were knocking on doors. We were active. And we didn't have any money, but we had a common theme. We had a common message. And what we wanted was what Obama was talking about. It. We wanted hope and change. And over the last 8 years, we've seen that. We've seen evidence of it. And he's going to be remembered as one of the greatest presidents in our history, I promise.
Definitely.
And it's because he brought that hope and brought that change, and we accomplished it.
Yeah. And now we got to get back motivated, and we got to put Democrats back in power at the local level, the state and national level, got to put, and in Congress and the Senate. We have got to put those people back in place to sustain what he has done. Now, that's their greatest hope, is to...
That's right.
To wipe that away.
Our opponents are insidious. What they've done is they've gerrymandered everything. If you look at how Alabama has been gerrymandered, it's just immoral. And one of the big things we've got to do is Democrats just fight against that when the next census comes, we cannot let the Republicans draw districts in such a way where we have no voice. And, you know, what they've done you know, in the black belt in Alabama, the stacking and packing and all that, I mean, it's unconscionable. What we've got to do is make sure that we have districts that really represent the people out there, and that's how we can win elections. But even in the face of gerrymandering like that, we can win if we stay true to our message. You know, I keep telling Democrats, quit being Republican light, be Democrats. And that message resonates. And the polling data backs it up. If you just talk to your neighbors, those conversations back it up. People want to see change in Alabama. They don't want to see this business as usual that's been going on, you know. And I would love to just blame the Republicans, but we have the Dixiecrats that were just as bad for about 100 years prior to that. And so it's time for real change. It's time for progressive change. And the only way that's going to happen is for people to get involved.
Yes, and that's what we're going to keep doing here at Bringing Voices to Power, is bringing people like yourself on to help get the message out. And feel free to share the show and send the link so people can listen to it. I'm going to take this break, and when I come back, I want to get your ideas on, like I got from Laura Barron, about some grassroots organizing. If you feel like it's just you and your community, you and a few people, what are some of the first things that you can do? And I just want you to give some tips on how to get started if you want to organize. I'll play this song by Ken Orr, one of my friends. He's from this area. He's a great singer.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, we won't be playing Ken. We won't be playing Ken. Audio clip.
Well, do you want to go ahead and talk about that now?
Yeah, go ahead and give my listeners some things they can do on a grassroots level to get something started where you can start organizing and maybe, you know, doing fundraisers or whatnot.
Yeah, I would say the first thing you really want to do is go and make sure that you're connected with, for example, the Madison County Democratic Executive Committee. Get connected with Forward Alabama. You can also get connected with the Alabama Democratic Caucus, that's the Black Caucus. All of these groups have meetings regularly. And so the first thing I do is attend a group like that. You're going to see like-minded people there. If you're in school, there's organizations you can get involved with. I know I'm a alum from Alabama A&M, and they've got a Democratic group that meets there. So the first thing I would encourage you to do is go to some meetings. The other thing I would encourage you to do is to really start paying attention to what's going on locally. How is state and national politics affecting where you live? You know, find out what ordinances affect, you know, your community and how these things are actually taking a role in your everyday life. That when the more you study, the more you learn through reading the paper, going to city council meetings, going to these meetings, and you start talking the language of politics, then you start to understand that this stuff isn't make-believe. Like, these laws actually really, really do affect you. They affect how much comes out of your paycheck. They affect where that money goes. They affect your civil liberties and civil rights. Knowledge is power is what I'm trying to say. So the first thing you have to do is, like I said, just suit up and show up and then learn. And then once you've learned a little while, then you can start to really start taking a stance on some of these issues and then making your voice heard. And you can do that in a variety of different ways. You can talk at your church. You can talk at civic organizations. You can talk online, just like you're doing right now. Get a blog, or, you know, you can set them up for next month and write to the paper, write to your congressman, write to your state legislators. That it's through activity. Activity is what breeds accomplishment. And if you're not, I mean, you can be involved from your couch all day long, but it's not the same as getting out there and shaking hands and having sometimes really hard conversations with people. But through those conversations, you start to learn, and more importantly, you start to really understand the policy that affects whatever issue, you know, that you're concerned with. And then most importantly, I would say, you know, don't be so stuck on rhetoric. It's really easy to get swept away by that. And to listen to the extreme loud voices on both sides of the aisle. I suspect most people are more centrist than they realize. And, you know, I hear a lot of Republicans talk a lot of nonsense, but then when you get them serious, it's like, oh, we got more in common than we think. And the same is true in the Democratic Party. You know, we hear a lot of loud extreme voices, but it's usually the centrists that kind of win, and they're the ones that really craft the policy. So what I would encourage young people to do especially is, like I said, to really learn about issues and think them through and listen to your opposition, that they're opposing you for a reason. And, you know, I learned this in corporate negotiations and a lot of other venues that weren't political necessarily, but understanding your opposition is honestly the key to your success. So those would be my tips.
You got to do the opposition research.
That's right. That's right. But get off the couch. That's the biggest advice I can give right there is get motivated, get active, get off the couch.
Put your boots on the ground.
That's right. Your voice will be heard. Your voice will be heard. And so that's how you amass influence and power.
Yeah. Yeah, that's most definitely. Most definitely. I had the good fortune of being invited to go to D.C. and talk about a couple of things. And I know the Siglin case is going to be one of them, and one of them is going to be the Branley Amendment. We'll go talk against the Branley Amendment and Dunn-Siglin, maybe other issues. But I'm looking forward to doing that.
Well, good. Well, I'm looking forward
some
to
of my life
more.
Yeah, because I would love to work with you, especially on the homeless issue. That's one of my things. That is one of my things. And I said, if they need like food or something, I'll be glad to help out on that because, like I said, I'm certified with the North Alabama Food Bank. And if those people out there home with food, we can start working on that. But
the
I look forward
I
to talking
do
to
is
you.
Help them get jobs, you know. So, we'll do it again soon.
Yeah. Well, any way I can help, you know, I'll send you over a resume or something. But we'll talk soon.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on, and
I'm glad to have you on, and I hope
conversation.
Yes, I want to get you and Laura Barron on to talk about the methadone clinic because I support methadone clinics myself, and like I said, I think Laura Barron is one of the greatest politicians we've had in Alabama, right behind Dunn-Sigelman. that's great. I'm gonna try to set that up. So I'll be talking to you in the future. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you for having me on. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.